Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to the Saturday Science Club on Soho Radio. We are back after a bit of an Easter hibernation. The canny amongst you may have noticed that we don't quite sound the same. I don't have the same bass tones as Matt, but I am kind of also a Matt. Matilda Hay is with you today, taking you through your science club. And I'm also joined by a PhD student in epigenetics called Peter Hill. Thank you for joining me today, Pete. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Till. This is great. I'm really excited.
So could you just briefly explain what epigenetics is? What is it that you study?
Epigenetics is literally everything on top of DNA. So DNA is made up of the four base pairs. There are four base pairs to DNA. But these base pairs can have can be modified. So you can have chemical modifications to the four base pairs. And you can also have chemical modifications to the proteins that DNA is wrapped around. Like, this actually holds DNA in place and makes it accessible or inaccessible to various environmental stimuli. So epigenetics is everything on top of DNA and how, yeah, that would be my best description of what
epigenetics
is.
You're looking at kind of the control mechanisms on top of DNA.
Yeah, yeah. And it regulates, epigenetics is important to regulate what genes are expressed. So in a cell has a specific identity. So a cell will either be a brain cell or a skin cell, mainly because of they express different genes, those two cells.
And the epigenetics makes them do that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Awesome. Well, we'll be hearing more about that a bit later. But to start us off and get our brains working on Saturday morning, I've got a riddle for you all. It's not really a science riddle, but science is all about problem solving, so why not? You can tweet us your answers at Soho Radio and we will be revealing who got it right at the end of the show. We will also be giving you a clue halfway through, so stay tuned. But the riddle this morning is, what can go up a drain pipe down but can't go down a drain pipe up? What do you think, Pete?
What can go? Say it again.
Up a drain pipe down but can't go down a drain pipe up. Well, if you think
confused.
You should be tweeting us at Soho Radio. Now, Pete, you've brought some music today. What are we going to kick off with?
Oh, I was hoping we were going to kick off with Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones.
Give Me Shelter by the Rolling Stones, Pete Hill's number one choice this morning. Really, really nice way to start the day. Thanks, Pete. Why did you choose that song?
Oh, no. I had watched 20 Feet from Stardom, which was a film, I think it won Best Documentary at the Academy Awards a few years ago.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
On backup singers. And in that, they were explaining that Mick Jagger called up a backup singer called Mary Clayton to do the female vocals on that, where they start basically... you know, these really high-pitched, I think they're yelling, "Rape, murder." And I heard the song again. And it reminded me of the first gig I went to, which was actually at the Rolling Stones, I think when I was 15 or something.
Wow.
And that song, yeah, I loved that song at the time. Still do.
Well, beautiful way to start the day. So coming up on the show, we have got our weekly science experiment. And if you're listening at home, all you will need today is an orange and a balloon. The cheaper the better. I recommend Poundland balloons, but other brands are available. And we will be doing something exciting with those later, so stay tuned for that. But before we get to our experiment, we have a little section I like to call Science News. And there normally is a jingle for that. But that jingle hasn't played. Science news. So the headlines that really caught me this week, Mount Everest may have got shorter. Have you heard about this, Pete?
No, I hadn't heard of it. Does this have to do with the earthquake that happened?
Yeah, so the earthquake in Nepal, because obviously earthquakes are caused by tectonic plates moving, and actually some of the ground near Kathmandu has risen by up to 3 feet, and they think the Himalayan range, parts of it have dropped by up to a metre.
That's really interesting as an idea.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, I guess, did the seismic plates go over each other, or did they separate in some way?
No, I think it's a destructive boundary. It's a destructive boundary. They're moving into each other.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's really interesting as an idea.
I haven't confirmed how much Mount Everest has changed by, or whether it has changed at all, but definitely parts of the range have dropped by a metre, and the data needs to be analysed further. So it was satellite images that they looked at to compare before and after the earthquake.
This just reminds me of my time studying geology when I was at university. That was... that was not a good experience for me. Geology, by the way, is a very interesting subject. I don't want to dismiss that.
Rocks.
I was not particularly good at it, is what it came down to.
I don't think I got beyond the rock cycle at school. But yeah. Lower Salem, if you're listening, fascinating. Volcanoes and everything. And then another thing that really caught my attention was that scientists have created a living biobank of tumours taken from people that they can now study to see how the different drugs
react. Oh, yeah. No, I saw this work. I think it was published in the journal Cell.
Yeah.
It was on colorectal cancer. I think they took biopsies from patients, and then they would derive the equivalent of an organ in a Petri dish from healthy tissue and from the cancerous tissue. And then they profiled each of these artificial organs. They call them organoids. And looked at how they respond to drugs and what mutations are going on at the level of DNA, what different genes are expressed in healthy versus cancerous tissue.
So what implications do you think that this has for sort of treating cancer in the future? Because it sounds really exciting.
So I think cancer, I guess, is heterogeneous, which means that... it's not one disease. It's made up of lots and lots and lots of different diseases.
Yeah, just and all have the
even,
same name.
Yeah, even something that sounds as specific as colorectal cancer doesn't mean that all colorectal cancers are one disease themselves. There's lots and lots of different subtypes, and each of those subtypes will respond to different drugs differently. But we don't necessarily know what subtype will respond to a drug, what drug. And this will allow being able to derive an organoid from a biopsy means that you can test different drugs on the organoids before you give it to the patient.
Oh, so you can take some of the tumor from the patient, test it in the lab, and then work out which drugs are the most effective.
Yeah, and so that will, I mean, this is probably still a long way off happening, but in the future, I can definitely see how we'll test drugs on these organoids first, and that will reduce the impact on the patient. So off-target effects of drugs that aren't going to actually be working, it will increase probably the response time because they'll be able to test the right drug on the patient immediately and see if that reduces the size of the tumor.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it'll be really exciting.
And it seemed in this preliminary study like they had some really good results and like quite effective.
Yeah, it looked really promising at a first glance. I've had only a quick glance at it, but it looked really promising.
Love science in action. Now, the other thing that has been dominating the headlines is obviously the election. So Conservatives are back in. What does this mean for science? I'm not particularly politically au fait, but Pete, can you tell us what this means?
I guess when I voted, I obviously had a quick look at all the different manifestos from the different parties. And what I took away from the Conservative manifesto was they want to focus on personalized cancer treatment. And that is, I guess, that is an extension of what we've just been talking about with these organoids derived from cancer. But what they, I guess, what will probably impact science the most doesn't obviously have to do with science, but it will be the EU referendum. And this, a lot of funding for science in the UK is from the European Union. and certainly funding young scientists at the beginning part of their career, outside of medical research, so any other area of science, probably the major funder is the ERC, which is the European Research Council.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this, I think having a referendum on leaving the EU, and if that referendum goes towards the no vote, it's going to dramatically change the landscape of funding in this country. It's going to dramatically affect the recruitment of really good scientists from other countries to the UK. And both of those things will probably change science, the science landscape in this country, more than anything, any specific policy about science that the Conservatives are suggesting.
So as long as we stay in the EU, it'll be pretty much the same as it's been.
No, as long as we stay in the EU, we'll probably be above Spain, realistically. But that has to do with...
No, the same as it's been.
Oh, the same as it's been.
It'll be, you know,
oh, yes,
status
yes.
quo
yeah,
will continue.
It will probably be the status quo will continue, and we'll continue to be a world leader, I imagine, in this country.
Well, that's encouraging. And I read that they have pledged, the Conservatives have pledged to be operating 15% renewable energy by 2020. Is that realistic?
I really hope so.
I hope so.
I don't know, but I do hope so. I think I would be doing a disservice if I said I was an expert on renewable energies, I think. But I do hope that that is the case. In fact, I hope it's more.
Indeed. Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for on the science news front today. So this is Sweet Thing by Van Morrison. Oh, 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 you sweet thing, sweet thing. My, 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 my. That was Sweet Thing by Van Morrison. Gotta say, I'm feeling super chilled after that song. It was so
yeah, it's such
lovely.
A great, it's such, I was saying, it's such a Sunday morning song.
Yeah, and though it's Saturday morning, it's just as appropriate.
It's just as appropriate on Saturday morning.
Now, it's not exactly science news, but it is kind of election related. And did you, dear listeners, when you were on your Facebook on Thursday, did you get notifications from your friends saying that they had voted or not? Did you, Pete?
Yeah, I was actually amazed at how many of my friends voted, and I was really happy to see that as well.
Yeah.
That so many of them did vote.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. Lots of statuses coming up. I actually, after seeing all those statuses, I was like, yeah, I'm going to put my status
yeah,
on my vote.
I think it really encourages people to vote. I don't know, but I think it probably does encourage people to vote.
Well, actually, there was a study in 2010 that looked into the effect of online social media and whether that influences real life at things such as voting. So this was a study done on Facebook, of course, back in the USA 2010 elections. And they had three groups. One group was shown an informational message. So they just got, like, at the top of their newsfeed, a message sort of encouraging them to vote and giving them information, like, here's your local polling booth or whatever. And then a second group got the same informational message, but they also got shown which of their other friends had voted. So kind of how we saw each other's statuses, if their friends had clicked a voted button, a bit like a like button, it would come up. And then the third group didn't get shown any message. And by comparing what people actually did to how likely that group was to vote from sort of online, from archive polling statistics, they realised that 340,000 extra people voted in that election, largely due to this.
I would say that's a really good service then that Facebook is doing. I think it's really important that people vote. I think it's even, you know, even if who's elected is not who you voted for, I think the actual act of voting is really important. And I think Facebook clearly, through this experiment, show that they can actually make a positive contribution towards that.
Do you think you'd be more influenced if you saw close friends voting or anyone voting and you don't think it would make a difference?
I don't think it would make a difference to me. I think I'm quite firm in my convictions that voting is important. But I will say that there is sometimes an apathy on polling day if the polling station is quite far away, you don't want to necessarily go. And seeing your friends vote, seeing the your friends having voted and posting these statuses online, I think it does remind you that this is, you're part of a community and it's important.
So what they found that was super interesting was of the, when you were shown pictures of the people that had said they'd voted, if it included your sort of within your 10 most important friends, you were much, much more likely to be influenced than if it was just a wide range of people, of the less close friends. But I also read something that said, ooh, is this too much power for Facebook? Because they could manipulate it and they could only show you which people were voting for certain parties and influence you that way. So it is still controversial.
I can see that. But I mean, through targeted advertisement, you're already exposed to that. We're all exposed to that on a regular basis. I think in the grand scheme of things, this is probably the best contribution that someone could do is just encourage voting.
Yeah.
In general. But yeah, obviously you'd have to look at how they're encouraging voting. I think that's a fair point.
Well, there you go. Experiment come true. And you can see, it seems like they've put it into action. Pete, what song are we going to have next?
I think we should have... I will continue with the upbeat songs. I think we'll have Emotions by Mariah Carey. I think that would be great.
We can't have that one.
Oh,
right,
actually,
now.
You know what I really feel like? I feel like Piano in the Dark.
Piano in the Dark.
Piano in the Dark.
Brilliant. Let's have that one then. While you're listening to these soothing tones of Piano in the Dark, me and Pete are going to be blowing up some balloons for our science experiment next. You can hear it there. So stay tuned. And if you want to join us, blow up your own balloon and get ready with an orange. Okay, thanks, Pete. Was Piano in the Dark there, but a smooth jazz to get us going on Saturday morning.
That's another Saturday morning song.
If you've just joined us, we had started the show with a riddle, so I just want to remind you all what this riddle was, and we're going to reveal one clue because nobody so far has tweeted in. Clearly it's a little too hard for the early hours of the day. So the riddle was, what can go up a drain pipe down but can't go down a drain pipe up? You getting any closer, Pete?
No, not yet. Up a drain pipe down, but not down a drain pipe up.
Yeah. Okay, so my clue, I'm just going to say it a little bit differently. What can go up a drain pipe when it's down, but can't go down a drain pipe when it's up? Okay, dear listeners. So what can go up a drain pipe when it's down, but can't go down a drain pipe when it's up? We will be revealing the answers at the end of the show. So tweet us at Soho Radio. Now, while we were listening to Piano in the Dark, we were blowing up some balloons and also peeling an orange. So today's experiment, we are going to burst these balloons just using our orange peel. All you need to do is get a segment kind of like how you might slice a lemon and then just literally peel the rind off. And what you want to do is squeeze the rind. Don't touch it to the balloon, just squeeze it, and it should squirt some of the juice from like the pimples in the orange onto the balloon. There you go. I promise you, I did not touch the balloon with my hands. I've literally just squeezed it. Pete, are you impressed?
I'm impressed. I'm going to capture this on camera, I think, so that we can prove to our listeners
you're
not touching
this. Yeah, so we will be tweeting a video of this later. So here you go. Here's the balloon. And here is my orange peel. And there.
Just amazing.
It has burst.
Just amazing.
So how that works is in the skin of an orange is a substance called limonene. I think about 97%. So when you look at the pimples on that skin, it is filled with limonene. And when you squeeze it, you squeeze out this limonene and it actually dissolves the rubber in the balloon. Here you go, Pete, here's a piece.
Okay.
Do you want to have a
so
go?
So I just squeeze it?
You literally just squeeze it over the balloon. So as I said, the cheaper balloons are better because there's less rubber to be dissolved. And you want to try and squeeze it over a bit.
Oh my God, that was so quick.
Yeah.
That was so sudden.
Really quick.
That's amazing.
There's one more that you can
do. I'm
going to
do one more. This is really exciting.
Pete getting in action there. Woo! Right, we have burst all our balloons.
I hope you guys are having fun.
All you need is a balloon, some orange peel, and you can impress your friends with your magic powers of bursting balloons. So, yeah, stay tuned for more after this next song. We will be asking Pete all about his career and hearing about some science events that you can be going to and calling a really, really cool play about the atomic bomb. But to take us into that, what should we listen to next, Pete?
I'm thinking some Bruce Springsteen. Philadelphia.
Fab. This is it. Streets of Philadelphia.
I was bruised and battered. I couldn't tell what I felt. I was unrecognizable to myself. I saw my reflection in a window and didn't know my own face. Oh, brother, are you gonna leave me wasting away on the streets of Philadelphia?
That was Streets of Philadelphia by Bruce Springsteen. So, Pete, is this the sort of music that you would listen to in the lab? Can you listen to music in the lab?
We can listen to music in the lab. It's usually, you have to get everyone on board with what you want to listen to. But this is definitely, some of the most played songs would be Bruce Springsteen, Philadelphia.
So is it kind of like a bit of a bum fight for who gets to have their music played
that's,
over?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. No, there's days where you're doing something really important and you really want to get, you know, your adrenaline up and you want to, you know, listen to something really, really upbeat, or that makes you feel like you're on top of the world. So occasionally those are the songs. I haven't played those yet. I think, but yeah, we'll get to that next, I think. That would be really good. I'm really excited.
Yeah, we'll end the show on a high. Yeah. So, right, let's find out more about what you actually do. So we know that you're studying a PhD and it's in epigenetics, but what actually are you doing? What are you looking at? Tell us more.
I study actually how sperm and egg cells develop in the embryo.
Okay,
and so
cool.
This sperm and egg are kind of amazing when you think about it. As in mammals, when sperm meets egg at the time of fertilization, you have a single cell, and from that single cell, 9 months later, an entire baby will be born.
Yeah, it is incredible.
With literally every cell type, you have brain cells, skin cells, heart cells, everything comes from that one cell.
Mm.
And that one cell comes from sperm and egg. So there's something quite unusual about sperm and egg. That they are able to start this process off. And so it's not that their DNA is different. Their DNA is the same as every cell in the body, essentially.
Yeah.
They have the same genes, they have the same...
Yeah, every cell in the body has the same DNA.
Yeah. They have half the DNA of everything, but they have, it's still the same DNA. It's just literally cut in half. So that's not what's giving them these amazing properties. What's giving them these amazing properties are, in part, it's the genes that they're expressing, especially in egg cells, which mm-hmm. are much more important to early embryonic development than sperm.
Oh, yeah. Girl power.
And what's also really important is their epigenetics. So literally, the chemical modifications on the DNA is really important, that those modifications are in the right place for early embryonic development to happen.
So you're saying that the modifications on the DNA are what allows them to then turn into every cell in the body that a new baby needs?
Yes, it allows them to start the process of that, to actually get to the stage where that they're going to start to differentiate. And then they'll, as you go through embryonic development, cells will start to respond to signals from the environment, and then they'll know to create your fingers, for example. That's very much the response to a signal.
Yeah.
But to get to that stage even, that's where the epigenetics of the sperm and egg is really important, so that early embryonic development has the right, I'll say, ground zero template to build up on.
Yeah. So you're looking at what those instructions are in the sperm and egg, is that right?
Yeah. And no, I'm looking at that. I'm definitely looking at that. I'm also looking at as to how they acquire that ground zero epigenetic template. Because that's quite an interesting process, and that's if we are to transform. So I think last year the Nobel Prize was won by two men, one called Shinya Yamanaka,
and mouthful.
One it's a mouthful, but he's an amazing, amazing scientist. Another by a guy called John Gurdon, and they actually transformed a cell that was a skin cell into a stem cell. So a stem cell being a cell that can become any other cell type. And that requires quite a lot of erasing the epigenetics of the skin cell, so it can acquire a more naive or a more ground state.
Yeah, so you've got to get rid of the instructions that are already in place.
And that's when sperm and egg develop in the embryo, that actually happens, that process happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm studying that process.
Amazing.
And see, maybe we can translate that to transforming a skin cell to a stem cell, which has lots of potential for therapies.
Yeah, so you're thinking if you understand how to do it, then we could do it to cells ourselves.
Yeah, and make it more efficient and a healthier process, so that we can capture or recapitulate stem cells from skin cells that are more like real stem cells.
And stem cells are so useful because when you do have damaged cells in your body, a stem cell can go in and sort of replace them.
That's basically it. With stem cells, we have the ability to regrow organs that could replace damaged organs. And we could transplant those organs into a patient without the fear of... If the stem cells come from skin cells that were taken from the patient, there's no fear of immune rejection. Since that's necessary to go from the patient to the stem cell and put it back into the patient, it won't recognize the cells as foreign, since it's recognizing the same surface molecules as the skin cell.
So you're basically working on something that could potentially have a huge medical impact.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I mean, I'm
puts my day job into perspective.
I'm part of just a huge team of people around the world. So not just in the UK, but in Japan and Canada and in the States, that we're all working on this collectively, individually, but also collectively.
Collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really exciting.
So, talk me through it. What would be like a typical day in the lab for you?
You go in. I would definitely have to have my morning tea. That's definitely... Scientists don't get up early, I will say. Scientists maybe show up at about 10. They work late. They work late, don't get me wrong, but they are not morning people. Go in, and then I would plan my experiments for the day. So I have both an office and I have a bench space in the lab. So the office is where my computer is. It's where I read all the week's publications. It's where I would think through the experiments. And then once I've thought through the experiment, I will go to the lab and I'll get all my reagents, all the chemicals I need, all the my pipettes, and I'll put my lab coat on, I'll put my gloves on, and I will start pipetting various liquids together.
It's like the classic PhD, loads and loads of pipetting.
Yeah. It's a very repetitive process, but that's kind of the... I would say that that's interesting, and I'm not someone that would really enjoy sitting at a desk all day. I like moving, I like using my hands, and this is a profession that really allows you to do that.
Mm.
But what's really interesting is when you've done the experiment and you get the results, and then you get to think about it. And it's largely like solving a puzzle. Like, it's just this giant puzzle where you get to create the pieces, but you don't just get to create random pieces. You have to create the right pieces, and then you get to put those right pieces together. So it's
and you don't even know what the puzzle quite looks
and you
like.
Don't necessarily
you don't have
know
a helpful picture
like.
On
no,
the box.
No, it's this incredibly complicated puzzle that is endless and has taken me, you know, years so far, and I'm sure it will continue to take me years to answer these questions. It's such an adrenaline rush to do science and look at results.
Yeah, that must be amazing when you get like a really interesting result that really sort of makes you go, whoa. Why did you want to study this particular area?
I was interested in the... When I started my PhD, the experiments about transforming a skin cell to a stem cell had just come out. And I could see that the research going on in the lab I joined was really... could be translated to that process. And that was probably why I chose the area. But then I chose...
Because it's really applied.
Yeah, it's really... Yeah. It's basic, as in... I don't mean that it's simple. I mean that it's fundamental. It's fundamental science, which I really enjoy. Because I'm a firm believer that we don't necessarily know the importance of something when we do something in science. It's only later that we can see how this fundamental research can be applied. And I like being at the early stages of that. And this was an interesting topic, as I said.
Yeah. I had my graduation on Wednesday. I was also at Imperial. And we had a really nice sort of graduation booklet with lots of famous quotes in it. And one of them was that the mark of a true genius is not the answer he comes up with, but the question he chooses to pursue. I think that was
That
really nails down science. The discoveries are made by choosing the right questions.
Choosing that question is just so challenging.
Yeah. Oh, I could talk to you about this all day, but I'm afraid we only have 10 more minutes the show. So what are we going to listen to next, Pete?
I'll give you the song that I listen to when I really need to get my adrenaline up. Let's go with Num Encore, Linkin Park and Jay-Z.
So this is what you do when you're getting a good experimental result.
You knew if I paid my dues, how will they pay you? When you first come in the game, they try to play you. Then you drive a couple of hits, look how they wait to you. From Marcy to Madison Square.
Yes, Jay-Z, personal favorite of mine as well, Pete. Great choice there. Really love that song.
That's very much about being in the lab.
And while we were listening to that song, we were also talking about the fact that Pete's actually been collaborating with an artist over his work.
Yeah.
Do you want to really quickly fill us in on that, Pete?
No, we had done, I had a collaboration with an artist called Georgia Ward Dyer, and she has made a lab coat.
Hello, Georgia.
She has made a lab coat inspired by some ideas from a publication of mine. We're hoping, the work's just been finished. We're hoping to display it at some point, maybe in the Welcome Collection or something.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, so we'll see what the Welcome Collection has to say. It'd be really exciting if that was it.
Incidentally, the Welcome Collection is awesome, and if you've never been, you should go anyway. It's on Euston Road and has free exhibitions that change quite regularly, looking at science, but sort of a science-art mezcla. So that would be incredible if you got your work there.
I have some photos of the work on my phone, so hopefully...
We will tweet them. Everyone can see the incredible lab coat. So it's basically a figure, one of the sort of images that you would get in like a presentation about Pete's work, and Georgia has embroidered it onto the lab coat.
It's exciting, but it's all that interface, I guess, of science communication and what it means to be a scientist and how you cope with ideas that you have that might not be consistent with the mainstream. But I just saw a really interesting play that kind of discusses a lot of these ideas, called Oppenheimer.
Yes, you were telling me about this, the World War II atomic bomb play.
Yeah, it was about J. Robert Oppenheimer, who was the head of the Manhattan Project, responsible for the atomic bomb. And it discusses all these ideas that I'm not sure we have time to really discuss it in detail, but it's well worth a watch. And it communicates the complex science involved in the atomic bomb really, really accessible. Anyone could understand it.
And that was the first time that sort of big science became a thing. Like nowadays we all collaborate. You were saying yourself, you collaborate with people in Japan and America.
Yeah.
But the atomic bomb was the first time they had actually really big teams.
And it remains the most extreme example of this today, where people from all over the country, all over the world were coming together to work in this Los Alamos city that was basically built. It was a boom town that was built for scientists. It's such an unusual idea, but it was brilliant. Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
I really want to go and see it. Where is it on?
It is on, I think, at the Vaudeville Theatre for the next 2 weeks.
Weeks only?
Yeah, it's from the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Right, we better get our tickets quickly.
Yeah, no, it's worth it, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely want to go and see that. This is pretty much all we've got time for, with one more song to come up. But we have to reveal the answer to our riddle. Now, we did have someone has guessed it correctly. Tony Moore has guessed that it is... Drumroll, an umbrella. Yes, an umbrella can go up a drainpipe when it's down, but it can't go down a drainpipe when it's up. So I hope you enjoyed that and it got the cogs working this morning. You've been listening to the Saturday Science Club on Soho Radio. Coming up next, we've got Tony Moore's Musical Emporium, which is a fantastic show. Definitely should be staying tuned for that one. Pete, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it was great to have me. Thanks very much.
What you do, and hope to have you again on the show sometime.
I hope so, yeah. This is great, great fun.
We will be tweeting videos of our experiment and also the amazing lab coat that Georgia has made of Pete's work. So all that's left now is to play out our final song. Would you like to introduce it, Pete?
Oh, I'm going to go with Emotions. Do we have it now?
We do. We do have it now.
I'm excited. Yes, Emotions by Mariah Carey.
And why have you picked this one?
Oh, it's just an upbeat song. If you want to dance in the lab, this is the one you listen to.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.